And due to our minute similarity to God, being a part and parcel of God, we also decided to express this out of our free will. And we wanted to do this separately from God, separately from Krishna. And this is what some would call falling from the spiritual world, which you could arguably say you are still in the spiritual world, so you haven't fallen. But anyway, this is a whole scriptural debate. If you're interested in it, I can show you some literature. But I'm not fully versed in it. I've only heard some authorities speak about it. But so we have, so due to this decision, we have associated ourselves with what Prabhupada calls the false ego, ahankara in Sanskrit, which is when Prabhupada uses ego, we in the modern English tongue, we get confused actually, because ego to us means like, it's like some kind of sense of pride or something, you know. But ego, linguistically, the etymological beginnings of ego are self. So when Prabhupada uses this term false ego, as far as I know, what he is trying to say is not false prestige, because he has a term for that in other places. He says false prestige. It is false self. So when we speak of ahankara or false ego, it is a self that we identify with which is not us. Which hopefully that makes sense. A virtual reality avatar, as they call them now. There's a famous movie called Avatar. It has nothing to do with Vishnu, although everyone is blue. It is about people linking themselves through some computer process to another being which is not them. It is a shell. And this is similar to what we have in our philosophy. We're in the spiritual world, and by some kind of spiritual or material hyperlink, we've connected ourselves to a body in this material world. And until that link is severed, we will act as if we are this body, and that this material world is our home. It is real. It is arguably real in the sense that it does exist, but it is temporary, and therefore, realistically, it isn't real in a tangible sense, because whatever results come from a temporary existence are temporary, and when that existence is severed, the results are no longer there. So, realistically, we are spiritual beings, but as long as we associate with the false ego, we will experience miseries from this material world. We will also experience material pleasures, which are pleasures but are temporary. And this comes as early as the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which, as we know or do not know, is when the real content of the Bhagavad Gita begins. Similar to Bhagavatam, the first canto is like an introduction to the dialogue. The first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is also like an introduction to the main dialogue. There's the description of the armies, and then there's the dilemma of Arjuna, and then from chapter 2, text 11, officially, Krishna starts to give instructions, though he says some interesting things before this. And as early as verse 2.14, he emphasizes that Matras Pashas Takuntaya, this verse is famous, it's one of my favorite. I learned it when I was 4, we all did. In a little choir, Matras Pashas Takuntaya. So this verse is saying that miseries and happiness are coming and going like seasons, and they are temporary, so tolerate them. There's nothing more significant about them. Tolerate them, they're going to be there, they're going to go away, they're going to come back, they're going to go away, they're going to come back. Don't give them that much attention, because they're material and they are temporary. They're not the sole purpose of our focus. Our focus is on eternal pleasure. Realistically, everyone is pleasure-seeking. Prabhupada says the soul is pleasure-seeking. That is our constitutional position. The words Satchitananda are used in Sanskrit. Eternality, knowledge, and bliss. These are the three aspects that we are made out of. If anyone asks you what the ingredients of the soul are, you can tell them sugar, spice, and everything nice. No, you tell them knowledge, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Someone says, what am I made of? You say, Your real self is knowledge, eternity, and bliss, whichever order you use them. Sorry, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. This is what you are made out of. This is who you are. However that translates is up to you, but this is what your soul is made out of. This is what other souls are made out of. This is what Krishna is made out of. This is the substance of Brahman in its true personal sense. If you meet anyone and they're very curious, that is your answer. You know, what is the self? The self is this. So, so eternity is given, obviously. Knowledge, yeah, you know everything about what you need to know. It's ignorance is something of this material world. Temporary nature is something of this material world. Misery is something of this material world. Bliss is spiritual. You see, these things only come from our touch with material reality. So then again, if you want to clarify what being eternal, full of knowledge and bliss is, you say it's having no temporary situations, no ignorance and no unhappiness. This is what the nature is, and it's not an airy-fairy, mystical nothing where everyone is just stagnant and static. It's an ever-variegated, eternally cyclical, moving, interacting phenomena, or metaphysical. I don't think phenomena is actually technically the right thing to say because it denotes material. It is constantly interactive. This is what we are. So we have gone from that, and we have grabbed onto a false ego, ahankara, which is one of the eight elements that Krishna lists in the Bhagavad Gita. There's different ways to list the elements. He will point out at one point. Some sages will say Krishna says 24 elements at another point, and there's some say three, some say this, some say that. Krishna says they are all right. And if you want to know how they are all right, I will refer you to Canto 11 of the Bhagavatam, Uddhava Gita, and he will explain every single one of them systematically, and they all make sense, surprisingly. But regardless, we're dealing with ahankara, the false ego, we're dealing with intelligence, we're dealing with the mind, we're dealing with the five senses, which are all in some way related to the five elements. This is Sankhya philosophy, that is the term it's given. This is a very prominent branch of Hindu, Vedic religion, theology, Dharma, that has been going on since time immemorial, according to the traditions. And it is mostly to do with different calculations of material elements, etc. I'm not fully conversant in my Sankhya philosophy, but it has a lot to do with calculating the substance of being. So we calculate, we analyze this creation we use the words gross and subtle matter. These are terms you're all familiar with. So gross, you know, earth, fire, wind, water, and this very strange element that most other traditions don't know, which is called ether, which is often referred to as space. It's tangible space because you have your earth, you have your water, and you have your fire, or luminosity. Some different terminologies are used by Bhakti, Sanatana Saraswati, and the Acharyas to explain these elements. Gases and air, etc. And then you have the space that they will fit in. You take away the space, you have nothing. Nothing else can exist. So from each element comes the last. And they all fold back to the false ego, ahankara. So the false ego is here. We have this false identification. And we use our intelligence to conjure up various philosophies to support our false ego, our false sense of being. And we use our mind to accept and reject different stimuli to prolong our false ego. And then from there, we use our various gross senses to grab hold of these things. So we look at everything in a sense, does it help me with my false ego? Does it help me with my chance to be the supreme controller and the supreme enjoyer. So, I mean, instantly when you see some tasty food, what goes through your head? This is tasty food. I should eat it. Wait, will this give me a stomachache? These considerations of the intelligence are to do with being the supreme controller and the supreme enjoyer. And the mind is used to accept and reject them. So the mind goes yes or no. That's all it really says. It says, do I want or do I not want? And the intelligence gives it reasons why. And the senses are the vehicles of which we use them. In this great example of the chariot, I hope it's here. Let's find it. These Bhagavad Gita's, the new ones, the pages fall out. It's cheap. In some of the older versions of the Bhagavad Gita, or maybe a version of different to mine that isn't missing the page, there is a picture of a chariot with five horses which represent the senses, and the reins represent the mind. The driver is the intelligence, and we are the lovely passenger watching the crazy thing go everywhere. And this is from, I think, the Kena Upanishad or the Katha Upanishad originally. Oh, thank you, Bruma. Maybe we will find it in this one. And it's actually a very, very good analogy. It's very, very sensible. If it's a very, analogies can only go to a certain extent, but it gives a lot of information. Yeah, it's not any of them. If a sense is like a horse, a wild horse, it's explained, it needs to be tamed or it's going to throw your car, your body off course. It's going to throw your mission off course. So you rein it in with the mind. Of course, your objectives is how you will use your senses. So spiritual objectives is what we want. So we rein them in the spiritual path. But if your path is sense gratification, then you rein them that way. It's a very simple formula. When you come up to something, your mind is going to ask you whether you want it or not. And you have to ask your intelligence. If your intelligence is full of material considerations, you will say yes to the material things. If it's full of spiritual knowledge from the Bhagavad Gita, from your spiritual master, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, from whatever spiritual sources you have, then you will consult this. So you can say, oh, look, a nice juicy steak. Yummy, let's eat it. Wait, cow killing is not dharmic. Let's not eat it. It's a very simple system. Does it make sense? Is it clear enough? You approach something, you decide whether you want it or not. I mean, realistically, we don't really dig deep enough to think about the consequences of our actions. Because if we did, we would behave a lot better. You know, we would all be... if people understood the karmic implications of day-to-day life, everyone would start to move a lot slower, you know. We would be really, conservative. Of course, our main goal is not about karma, good karma or bad karma. Our main aspect is about Krishna. So we have to think, do our activities support a relationship with Krishna or not? And then Krishna makes it even clearer. He says, you know what's more dear to me than myself is my devotees. So then we have to think, do our actions affect our relationship with devotees or not? Are we making positive impact on devotees? Are we giving them trouble? If we're giving them trouble, we should stop because we are jeopardizing our entire spiritual life. This is our thing. I mean, obviously, you're not to freak out and not walking around on your tippy toes, not to tread on anyone's toes. You have to be a human being. But if you know something is directly negatively affecting a devotee and it's only giving you sense gratification, then you have to check yourself. This is what it's called being selfish. You know, this is why your parents told you how to share your toys. You know, this is why basic things were taught. We have to keep this in mind. And that's why once you have this idea in your intelligence, then everything else falls into place. Once you have spiritual intelligence, you know, your mind is your friend. your senses are wonderful things. Senses for tasting prasadam, for, you know, seeing the deity, for smelling the flower. We have these examples. What's his name? Maharaj. Help us out, Madhu. No. Maharaj. No, the nine processes of bhakti were excellently executed by... Come on. We're close. I know. When it comes into my head, it's like one of those, you know, when something's on the tip of your mind and Krishna steals it away? Yeah. It's in Bhagavatam. You got the seventh canto. Prahlada Maharaj says the nine processes of bhakti. He gives the different examples. He's like Hanuman for a saver, and then Ambarish. Ambarish Maharaj. Yeah. Sorry. I completely had the complete wrong letter of the alphabet. Ambarish Maharaj. Yeah, he was using his legs to go to the temple. He was smelling. He was using all his senses in Krishna consciousness. He was not a fanatic devotee with no philosophical understanding, and he was not some crazy cultist. He was having fun, people. He was enjoying himself. He was having a great time. His life was sublime, and he wasn't taking any kind of crazy drugs, and it wasn't some kind of euphoric experience. This was true, genuine happiness. This is like, it was real stuff. He was having real relationships with people. He didn't know names and faces. He was, you know, this is what we want. We don't just want everything to be impersonal. When we use, like, even the word, you know, I say Ananda, impersonalists love using this word Ananda. They're like, yes, Brahman is Ananda. I've spoken with an impersonalist sannyasi once, not by choice. And, yeah, and he's like, when you get close to the Supreme by service, you experience some taste of Ananda. But when you get closer and you merge, then it's like perfection. And it's just like, I just wanted to vomit, you know. No, it's when you are at a distance where you can have a relationship. There's no distance anyway. It's a relationship. It's interaction. If you're just blobbed in some non-interactive substance, you go mad and you come back to this material world looking for a new taste. We need to have relationships. And this isn't, the word relationships is very misunderstood these days. We need to have loving reciprocation with people. And how do we say, how do you have a loving reciprocation with Krishna? You get to know him. You know Krishna. You know what he likes. You know, and obviously we have our limitations, and we do have different chemistry with everyone in our conditioned states. You can't just go up to every single person. Being a pure devotee doesn't mean you just go up to everyone and they all love you. And, you know, even when God was on the earth, there are people who did not like God. So even when Prabhupada, who we consider without argument a pure devotee, when he was on this earth, people criticized him. People had arguments with him. It wasn't that they all just stepped out of the way. Many did. But he was a person. And for me, when I read the Lilamrita, the most satisfying sections are not when Prabhupada's extreme majesty is expressed, because he was an amazing person. Like, materially speaking, he's on a few different lists of honorable... he's on a list... people who achieved amazing things after the age of 70. He's got this honor in some society. People barely recognize what Prabhupada has done for the humanity at large. But he did amazing things. As a philosopher, as an intellectual, you know, Prabhupada downsizes his linguistic ability and his philosophical understanding. But he was incredible. So without even giving him the spiritual credits, you know, just giving him the material ones, he's already got a full... But doesn't mean everyone's like happy, happy, joy, utopia with him. Prabhupada said utopia, you know, a society where there is no friction is impersonalism. This is not our philosophy. We're not going to create a society now and everyone's going to come in and they're going to be mindless, happy wonders. No, that's some kind of drug factory, and that's not going to last forever. We're creating dynamic, interactive relationships with people, ups and downs, smiles and frowns that are really meaningful. And you just have to add Krishna into it. It sounds like a cultish philosophy, just add Krishna. But he's the spice that makes all of it taste nice. It really works. You know, I have a family, I have three brothers. They're all devotees. They're all getting married. They're all serving Krishna in some way or another. They're all actually very much engaged in the temple back in Australia. Before that, they weren't. They were carrying on and partying, maybe. Sorry, guys. But yeah, it makes our relationship as brothers. Obviously, I have parents too. Our relationships are more genuine. It's not that, you know, when I was in my first years of Gurukul and I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. But, you know, and they say, you know, all these material relationships are Maya. But what about our parents? This is also a materialistic relationship. You know, it was a very confusing philosophy for a 4 or 5 year old to be given. But they're devotees. There is some sense to it that is good, but you need to learn. We were taught by a lot of neophyte devotees, I will admit. I'm sorry if that's critical in any way, but it's true. You know, we were given lots of neophyte concepts, and it stifled our material expressions, and some just rejected everything and went wild. I tried my very best, and it was difficult to find motivation in life to do much. But to do anything, because it's all material, it's all temporary. But no, you just have to add Krishna. You want to be an astronaut? Oh, that's a little bit of a ridiculous one, but you could do it. Do it for Krishna. You know, there's ways to directly and indirectly apply Krishna. And that's down to your realization. And that's not to criticize anyone, but yes. Some things, you know, people get a job and they give money to Krishna. Some people, their business is Krishna's business in their mind. Whether it even, most of them usually give money to Krishna, but even if a cent doesn't ever go to Krishna, their business is for Krishna. You know, like, you have to think it's for Krishna. You know, I am serving my husband or my wife or my child or my parent or my sibling for Krishna. It's amazing. It works. You know, it doesn't mean I'm converting everyone to become a Hare Krishna cultist. You know, it doesn't mean I'm going to forcefully throw down a philosophy in them, because that is also false ego. I think I'm right. My religion is right. Let me stick it in someone's face. And if they don't agree with me, then I'm a Majjhima Adhikari, and that means they're envious and I should reject their company. No, that's neophyte. I have Krishna. I want to give Krishna to people, but I also understand, as this verse and the verses before it are saying, Krishna is in control of this. I am not the supreme controller. The satisfaction of preaching is not that you control people into becoming devotees. You just let Krishna do the work, and it's easy. You know, my prayer was that my brothers became devotees. I didn't do anything to make them devotees. They became devotees. Krishna answered my prayer. Okay, I made the prayer. Therefore, I am the cause of this. No, he just did it. I did nothing. I just walked on. So I got everything I wanted. They got everything they wanted. And Krishna did it all. And, you know, I'm not complaining, because I didn't. You know, it's not that Krishna just said, no, you are a robot and you will do what I say and you will love what I say. I had my free will. I used it instrumentally and I didn't do much at all. You know, I'm not a great devotee. You want to talk about my struggles in life? Don't worry, you're doing better than I am. But, you know, he still threw everything at me. And I still have struggles and material miseries. You know, I'm not like skipping and hopping, but life is a lot better than it would be without Krishna. And I can say that for sure. I can say that 100%. That's not a belief. That's a knowledge. That's a fact. It's an experiment you can try, but it's not, what is it they say? Experiential. No, there's one great term that scientists say, no, it's just his opinion. It's not a real scientific fact. No, it's like everything has to be verified by people, ultimately. So you can verify this. And if you're not happy, then I wouldn't say there's something wrong. You could say it, that's a little bit of a negative way. But there can be some adjustments. And there's always plenty of adjustments. Because even the person who's like at Prabhupada's level, or someone who's a pure devotee, they still see there's need for adjustment. It's always healthy to have a little bit of that. Too much may be a little bit obsessive. But, you know, it's always good to see yourself, we have Trinada Pishanishya, you see yourself humble like a blade of grass. I wouldn't say, not useless like a blade of grass. You can still do something, but, humble. Be humble, but don't be low self-esteem. You have plenty of reasons to be satisfied. It's an active endeavor. It's a daily, momentary, hourly, minute-by-minute endeavor to be happy, but that is because we're battling with ignorance. You have to battle at ignorance because ultimately we are happy. It's not that we're battling to be happy every moment because we're unhappy by nature. By nature we are happy, but we have been covered over. So all we're doing is encouraging you moment by moment to be yourself. Be yourself beyond all these bad things that you've picked up on the way in this material world. Just be you. Let go of that and just be you. Be a be someone Satchitananda. Be eternal. Be knowledgeable and be happy. This is who you are. And if you're not there, then there's some material things you're holding on to. And, don't worry. We're all in the process. We're all in the shower. We're all cleaning ourselves off. Some are cleaner than others. Some use more soap. Some scrub faster than others. But we're all there. We're all trying to get ourselves out. But, it's a constant endeavor. Don't be bored. The biggest problem now is depression in society. But realistically, it's boredom. Don't be bored. Idle mind is a devil's workshop, say the Christians, and we say yes. Don't be bored. There's plenty to do. Doesn't mean you have to go burn yourself out and then feel really bad that you've got no energy and you can't wake up anymore and, your life's all chaotic. Pace yourself, but you've always got something to do. Even if you like reading, we've got plenty of books to read, guys, really. You can read them all, and apparently you can read them all again, and you still get more out of them, and you read them again and more. There's plenty of books to read. If you don't like reading, there's plenty of other things to do. There's plenty of deity worship to do. If you're not good at deity worship, there's plenty of cows to milk or plow some fields or grow some crops or do some preaching or build some temples or do a degree in Vaishnava theology at Bhaktivedanta College or do some other radical thing, or knit or sew or be... Oh, you do something even more modern, be a hairdresser or be a corporate manager, be a rally driver, but do it for Krishna. And do it, if you can't do it directly, do it indirectly. And see where it gets you. Questions, comments, chastisements, quotations. Madhukopal. Which part? Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Well, we think it's false prestige, but it's not. It's false self. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, false prestige comes along with having a false self, but it's not what Prabhupada means when he uses the word ego. If you got a good dictionary, put ego in there, computerized or non-computerized. I got a really nice one on one of these old Microsoft programs, and I put it in there. Scroll, 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 etymological beginnings somewhere in Greek or whatever, self. And I was like, oh, Prabhupada's old Victorian English yet again. We have no idea what he's saying. He's speaking plain English. We just forgot how to... for him it's plain English. When he was taught English, this is what it meant, and this is how he uses it. And he learned a few different phrases on the way, but it puts it, you figure it out. And I love the term, the use of, virtual reality or playing a video game in life, and because it's really like that. You flick off the TV, people come back. My father, he loves it. When the boys, we get down and we jump on our little Xboxes and PlayStations and that. and aggression and all these unwanted qualities come out because we're associating with the false ego of the video game, the false ego within the material world. You have another material world. It's exactly the same thing. We're in the spiritual world, we're happy and blissful, and we're just switched on this false ego TV, and we're just like, ooh, look at me. I'm here in this cool world, and this is my God kingdom. And, look how good we're going. it's all there. It's a scientific formula. The Sankhya philosophy is there to aid our understanding. More? Anything else? Marcus. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I will justify that. We should constantly endeavor to be spiritually happy. We're endeavoring to fight ignorance because actually it's not even an endeavor to be happy. We are happy. This is the nature of the soul. So if you're unhappy, it means you're not really in touch with yourself. I mean, obviously not. We're in the material world. It's not a big, if you go, wow, no, I'm miserable, so I mustn't be in touch with myself. It's like, well, yes, duh, we're all here. Don't over-endeavor for material happiness, no. This is in the nectar of instruction. This is a big duh. Really, you don't need to. Honestly, you start doing things for Krishna, he just gives you so much stuff. If you need misery, he'll give it to you as well, if you really need it. But, Your karma is already set, so whatever you got, it's already set. You don't need to work for anything else in this life. Just use this life for Krishna. And the worst thing's going to happen is you might get some good karma. Gosh, that'd be terrible. That's the worst thing's going to happen. You're going to come back with a better life. Gosh, So you're not going to lose anything. Take some risk. Be bold for Krishna. Prabhupada, he said, I'm going for the white rhino. The white rhino is very rare. Hunters, they look for the white rhino. And anyone who tries to find the white rhino is not criticized because it's impossible. But if you catch the white rhino, I don't know what they do with it, then everyone will praise you. So go for the white rhino, go for Krishna, just do it. No one's going to criticize if you don't make it. Why not? It's like you lose, you had a good shot, You come back, you try again. Big deal. It's better to try for that than try for everything else. Everything else is going nowhere fast. And look at society. Every single advancement we're making seems to put us back one step. We used to farm on fields. How horrible was that? Prabhupada says, no, you used to work for 2 months a year and then the rest you had off and you could craft things and make things like this and that. Now we've got to work 10 hours. It used to be 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. Now it's 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. It's like incredible, We're just working like asses. We're not happy. People work because they're unhappy. Work is not happy, but it just keeps them from thinking the fact that they're unhappy. It's like we're just hiding from that. That's not what we should be doing. We should be happy, and we should be just doing something for Krishna. And if we're not happy, just do something for Krishna, and then we will be happy. It's like it all works out in the end. It's like if you're not good in the first place, you end up good, and if you're good in the first place, you may as well be there. Why stoop lower, Did that help? Yeah, and I don't mean like bliss. Bliss out, yeah. Well, no, spiritually, no. Ananda is the word. It means Prabhupada uses the word bliss. Like I said, people, when you use the word bliss, we use this terminology. Prabhupada was using it when he was preaching. This was like, oh, far out, man, bliss. Yeah, that's what everyone's after. Impersonalism love it because for them, like how the word is understood is perfect. It's like your eyes roll back and you just blank out into some beautiful, wonderful... No, like, you know, like I said, like Prabhupada, for me, his majesty isn't the amazing thing. It's he's a person. Like Prabhupada, his doctors said, you need to stop eating sweets. You have diabetes. You will die. I know you will die. I don't know if they said you would die, but he said, I would rather die than give up sweets. This is not like an amazing, like, philosophical point. This is just Prabhupada's a human being. And it's wonderful. He was like a little, you know, he seemed so big. He was this little guy. And I didn't meet the guy, but, you know, he's like a little person. And he was just going around conquering the world. But he was just like a person. He had his likes. You know, it wasn't that we're, you know, Prabhupada encouraged his devotees to make all these puris and that. And some devotees made some cakes and that. And he, you know, he liked it. But he liked his Bengali food, you know. You could say he was embodied or whatever. But no, he's human. So we have, like, all the... this relationship and all that is not the problem. This is impersonalists like to flip it. You know, relationships cause misery, therefore no relationship. No, material relationships cause misery, therefore spiritual relationship. And this means you can, you know, Krishna and Radharani, you know, I don't like to bring them in so much because it's a little bit too sahaja, but now Krishna and Radharani, these are the most esoteric aspects of God and blissful magnanimity, and they're fighting. Like, they're like, you know, teenage lovers. They're going crazy. They're, you know, Radha's furious at Krishna half the time. There's something going on, you know. It's not just like big grins on everyone's faces and everyone's like drones. The spiritual world, people, like, knowledge is there. That's what it is. Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge and bliss. It's not like mindless bliss. It's exceptional happiness. There's different aspects of emotions. It's not just everyone's happy, 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 happy. There's aspects. So, but it's spiritual. It's for the fun of it. You know, why does Krishna have all this creation? In the Vedanta Sutra, it says simply for leela, simply for the fun of it. And leela means fun, not because you need it. It's not because, God, I need to go have some fun. It's just fun. It's just a good time. It's just, I tell people the spiritual world is a party, and they go, Prabhu, that's a very mundane example. No, it's a party, you know. They're having fun, you know. They're cooking up feasts every night. Krishna's got his uncles and his friends and everyone's coming in. They're going out and they're swimming and occasionally beating up giant monsters. They're just like, you know, they're having sports. There's like a whole shastra on sports and fun games, you know. I don't know, have access to it, but, you know, like, they're just having a ball. And, you know, every now and then one of the cowboys gets pushed over and he has a cry or whatever, but, you know, they keep going. You know, Mother Mangal gets teased until tears, but guess what? Krishna cheers him up. I wouldn't mind that. You know, like, and they have wrestles, and even Krishna loses the wrestles. Even God gets beaten up, you know? It's like, this is, they're having fun, man. Like, what are we trying to do? We're trying to, like, go out and get hooked on some crazy substances and in the middle of the night and barely sleep, can't, you know, vomiting, and, like, we're ridiculous, you know? It's like, our idea of happiness is, like, way off par. And our ideas of relationships are just complete complication from start to finish. Romantic or non-romantic, it's like, you know, everyone's just out for themselves and everyone's unhappy. You know, it's like people can't even talk to their parents, their partners, you know. Divorce is, like, it's not a big thing. Everyone's divorced. You know, it's like no one's getting along. From start to finish. So, like, you know, it's trying to change it up a bit, you know. But this is the main thing to understand is this is the natural thing. We're going for the unnatural. You know, it's a big thing to be natural these days. And it's true, you know. Even in the material world, it's like that. You know, you try to get all these substances from under the earth and turn them into little handbags, and you have a difficult society, whereas you get something... local and fresh and nice and big and green, and it's like, it's good for you, you know. Okay, the Bhajan people are hiding outside. I was wondering why they're not here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki.